This is Dylan FM, a Freak Music Club podcast. I'm Bob Dylan. If you love Dylan, you're in the right place.
If you listen to our episode with Wesley Stace, you know that he's a dyed-in-the-wool true Dylan fan. During the conversation, he made a comment that the way to think about what Dylan was doing in the 80s and early 90s was his live shows. And I asked him if he'd seen any and what his thoughts on them were. And he went off and told me a lot of great stories about tons of shows that he'd seen. And it was fantastic, but that episode was so long, I pulled it out into this little bonus. So this is about 10 minutes of Wesley Stace telling us about his history in seeing Bob Dylan live. Where did you see him? How was your experience with live pre-Time Out of Mind?
Well, funnily enough, I'm reading the new Ian McEwan novel, and in the new Ian McEwan novel, there are two or three pages about going to see Bob Dylan at Earl's Court in 1981. And coincidentally, I looked in my scrapbook. You probably can't see this because it's on a screen, but that is the clipping from the Sunday Times or Telegraph or whatever that I sent to my dad, because he said he'd buy me tickets to a night of Bob Dylan, and he did six nights at Earl's Court. And the night I went, I'm pretty sure, was the exact night that Ian McEwan describes. When I see him, I'm going to make sure he went on the Friday rather than the Saturday, because I went on the Friday. But because I went to the first night of that, and that was the first time I ever saw Bob Dylan. But in the 80s, I saw him. I saw the Earl's Court. I then saw two concerts in 84 on the Santana tour, one of which was in Cologne with Joan Baez on the bill. And then I saw him, of course, with the Heartbreakers, two or three of those nights, one of which we had guest tickets somehow to Wembley. And it was the only time I was ever close to George Harrison. He was about 10 feet away, like in the darkness with people all around him. And I don't think that was the night Dylan did Here Comes the Sun, though. I think the might, or maybe it was. You would have think it was, or something, or I can't remember. There was a Beatlesy bit, but I think maybe there might have been two nights and I wasn't there for that night. Then I got my record deal and I started seeing Dylan a lot. I mean, a lot. I went certainly on the Neverending Tour. I saw that in Glasgow, Birmingham, London, but I would travel around Europe with my friend John Baldy, sadly deceased, to go and see my friend Willem Merleman, who lived in Amersfoort in Amsterdam. And for a couple of times, we satellited from Willem's house. There were other people we'd meet, Christian, whose last name I can't remember. He was great, a taper. And the guy who was caught taping once because it was outside and everybody had receded in the rain and he was just sitting there with his bandana under which he had his microphones. And that was where I met Glenn Dundas for the first time. I met Glenn Dundas outside a concert in Utrecht or Brussels or Den Haag. I remember because if you went to Europe, you could, you know, go to Utrecht, Brussels, Den Haag on three nights and see.
This is early 90s?
Neverending Tour. And I was seeing a lot of, late 80s. Yeah. And I was seeing a lot of shows. I remember one we went to in a kind of a gym in Brussels, and it was very early on that tour, and they knocked out like Trail of the Buffalo. It was like incredibly exciting. It was that band would have been Garnier, Christopher Parker, you know, it's very early on in that tour, G. Smith. It was just very exciting. Then I moved to America in 1990, and I started just going to see shows. I remember seeing him in Athens with Wire Train supporting. And like, I remember playing with the Violent Femmes in Baltimore at Johns Hopkins, doing my support set and then driving down to Wolf Trap, where the promoter had said, yeah, you can come to the back entrance and just, you know, you could. And he took me out and just stood on the side of the stage. And then, so I just kept seeing Dylan a lot. I see him every time he comes through. I don't go to strings of gigs like I would have done in the late 80s or perhaps the early 90s. Like I remember when I was making some album of my own, probably Why We Fight, I went to four or five nights at the Pantages, I remember, and I took Greg Leese with me one night and I went with Steve Berlin another night and, you know, because we were kind of making that album at the time. So, I mean, I would go if I could. That's kind of dwindled over the years. Now his show is so much more professional and similar to each other every night. I find that my pleasure is more in seeing it once and in taking somebody and really enjoying them enjoying it. Like, I haven't managed to take my daughter yet, but I'm very excited to take her, you know, should we get another concert in Philly. And the last concert in Philly was absolutely sensational. And I had actually seen that in New York a few days before. So, I mean, I do go and see him. I remember I saw him a few times on the Dylan Santana tour in America, certainly went to Seattle. And Peter Blackstock, the writer, wrote, and, you know, and in his review wrote, and there in the fifth row was John Wesley Harding spending all his Sire royalties on Bob Dylan concert tickets. And I wrote a thing to Peter Blackstock saying, wrote a thing to the newspaper demanding an apology for suggesting I'd ever received a royalty from Sire Records. I mean, you know, that was a very long answer, but of course all these stories, or every gig is filled with a wonderful memory or even a bad memory sometimes. But I remember in Glasgow, we were invited to go to that Never Ending Tour. And I think that was the only night he ever played Congratulations. I've been to a lot of Bob Dylan gigs, but I've never really been at Bob Dylan gigs where anything, you know, apart from Chrissy Hynde or Elvis Costello turning up, which is always great, but I don't care. I'm not talking because I don't like either of those.
No, I understand.
It's just not my focus is somebody coming on and singing Knocking on Heaven's Door in the last verse, you know, because they're very excited. It's just not what I'm there. And I remember I saw two fantastic Time Out of Mind shows at the El Rey in LA that Sheryl Crow was the support for. It's the only time I ever saw her live, I think. And she did a set, and then Dylan played these very songs and a lot of them, and they were jolly good shows. I think Gregory Peck was at one of those shows, and Sally Kirkland was at every show I've been talking about.
What you did there was is a interesting thing that is important, I think, for all the fans know, which is all these periods that academically get analyzed and put in these sort of cartoon buckets. When you were there almost any time, and I think the tapes, to me, the tapes reveal this. People go, Dylan was, you know, shit here, or this period was bad. And I'm like, the tapes are fantastic. And then people who were there, you know, loved every night of it. So,
yeah, I mean, I think I've always been just genuinely kind of thrilled to be in his presence. Like when you really love an artist, just to share the physical space with them is great. And I've foolishly said in my life many times that I'd rather see Bob Dylan be terrible than most people be the best they're ever going to be. But sadly, there is some level of truth in that, because I've seen many a train wreck on stage, but often that's why it used to be more fun going than it is, because you never knew quite what to expect. And sometimes it would all kind of hew together and in a flash, or the totality would be amazing. And that's what, I mean, why we're talking about this specifically, because I said it would be unfair to judge that period from Empire Burlesque to Time Out of Mind solely by the recorded albums, because all you've got is Oh Mercy, which is, I think, slight, Under the Red Sky, which is subpar, and two albums of folk songs where he's obviously searching for a little inspiration and getting himself together, and a few little bits and bobs here and there. But clearly the gigs were the things then, and I saw a lot of them, and some of them were great and some of them were quite mediocre. You know, the going to see him over and over at Hammersmith, and there's a little keyboard set up at the front and he doesn't play it once, and then finally sits down and plays Shooting Star on like the 17th night. You know, it's like, it was sometimes quite weird. I remember seeing the Counting Crows support him in San Jose, and I remember when he was doing that nice version of She Belongs to Me, but I can't remember what year any of that was. And so I say that to demonstrate the fact that that's what it was about. It was about those live performances and, you know, all that Hiding in Plain Sight and Never Ending Tour and Diminishing the Myth. And I'm sure that was all part of a fairly conscious process of keep on keeping in on, you know.
My thanks again to Wesley Stace for talking with us about Bob Dylan.